Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to The Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to welcome you to the post-diet revolution. Post-diet revolution means no more dieting. It really is possible to lose weight and gain health all without ever going on another diet. That means no more counting calories, no more counting carbs or fat grams, no more thinking about food all the time. When you deal with what's eating at you instead of focusing on what you're eating, everything changes for good. So I'm super happy. You know what? I am wearing a sweater. I am so excited because you know what? It is not in LA today. You know what? It is not. It is not hot. It is lovely and cool, and it is a beautiful day, and hopefully everyone is out there enjoying life. So first off, I want to share with you my Instagram post from yesterday, and I'm sharing it with you because it was one of the most popular Instagram posts I've ever posted. Here's what I said. Be who you are, not who the world wants you to be. Be who you are, not who the world wants you to be. And then I told this story, true story, about a woman I knew who had adopted twins from China. They were about 8 months old, super cute. This is a long time ago. And she was an equestrian, and she was planning for like these girls, these babies, for their future equestrian career. She's like, well, you know, they could take their first riding lesson when they're two. Apparently so. They could take their first riding lesson when they're two, and then they can start to compete when they're five, or, you know, whatever it was. And she had their whole lives on horses, like completely planned out for them. So I said, well, what if they don't like riding horses? And she looked at me like I just spoke, I don't know, Bulgarian or something. She just looked completely nonplussed. And she said, of course they'll like horses. She's like, I like horses. My family rides horses. Everyone in our family rides horses. They're going to love horses. Ooh, big problem. Because she really was not interested in what those girls were actually going to like or dislike. She was already planning for them to be clones of herself. So the twins were supposed to be who she was, who she wanted them to be, at the expense of who they actually were as individuals, which was as yet unknown, as they were 8 months old. So this might be kind of an extreme example, or maybe not. Because I know so many people who became doctors or lawyers or professionals of some kind. They did what they were supposed to do. They did what was expected of them by their families, by society. And these professions were not their first choices. They dreamed of being creative in some way. They dreamed of doing something that was close to their hearts. But instead of disappointing the people in their lives, they dropped their own dreams. They disappointed themselves. They dropped their dreams so that they would make other people happy, sacrificing their own happiness and authenticity. What does this have to do with eating issues, with binge eating or problematic eating? Well, this can really eat at you when you're not being authentic to yourself, when you are living the wrong life, when you're living someone else's life. It's really painful. It's really horrible. And that eats at you. And then when it eats at you and it bothers you, but you don't want to think about it, you don't want to know it, maybe you use food or something else to distract yourself from the truth that you don't want to know, the unknown known, the thing you don't want to know, that is in the root of what causes the weeds of eating issues. So, you know, we get all kinds of messages about how we're supposed to be. So I urge you today, don't listen to those messages. Do not listen to the messages about who you are supposed to be. Be who you are. Discover who you are. Be your true, genuine self. Live a life that is right for you. And people on Instagram really love this. I hope that you will also be inspired. Someone wrote me, she said, this is so true. Looking back on my life, a good majority of the things I've done are to make other people happy, or because that's what you're supposed to be doing. If I don't do something that's expected, my family or friends are mad at me. So basically, everyone else is happy and I'm not. Exactly. Perfectly put. You know, then you sacrifice you to make other people happy. And then to comfort yourself, to distract yourself, maybe you turn to food. Maybe you turn to ice cream, because ice cream is very correlated with comfort. That's part of my food mood formula. So if anyone would like to join me today, call me up. Let me know what's going on with you, what's eating at you. The number here at the studio is 818-602-4929. 818-602-4929. Whatever is on your mind is relevant and important, because when you don't deal with what's bothering you, it eats at you, and then you're more likely to eat. And we don't want that. So I just mentioned my food mood formula, and that is that certain types of food cravings are related to certain internal emotions. So generally, smooth and creamy is related to a need for comfort. So let me talk a little bit about ice cream. Now, ice cream, we're going to talk about the science of ice cream and the emotions of ice cream. So ice cream has long been associated with comfort. Ice cream as a quick pick-me-up is like practically stereotypical in movies and TV. Every chick flick, right, girl gets dumped or something, and what does she do? She just dives into a pint of Ben and Jerry's or some kind of ice cream. And not just women. I used to love Friends. I admit. Why am I admitting it? Is that a bad thing? No, it's not a bad thing. I love Friends. I love Friends. How I Met Your Mother. This was my mind candy, and we have a caller, so hold that thought. Hi, caller. You're on with Dr. Nina.
Hi, this is Nick, not on my regular phone.
Hi, Nick. It's good to hear from you. It's been a while.
Yeah. You know, what you were mentioning before hits home, I have a son who wants to control my life, you know, and if I don't do what he wants me to do, I'm this terrible person, and, you know, he does this thing, maybe texts me how bad I am, and texts me my daughter doesn't love me, and I've done this, all these things in my whole life, terrible, because I don't do what he wants me to do.
So and, your son is a bully.
Yeah, I'm telling you, it's driving me crazy. I mean, the texts I get are just, I mean, I can't even think to call people that name. And he's just unaware of what if he would only, you know, see or read what he sends, then maybe he could stop and look, and maybe look at the other side. And I'm not saying I'm perfect, okay?
Well, nobody
but
is,
I
Nick.
Can only take so much, and I just don't answer the phone anymore. He thinks I'm terrible. I won't answer the phone calls anymore because I don't want to pick up a phone and get beaten up by my kid telling me I'm not exercising enough, or how many sit-ups did you do today?
Wait.
Or,
he asks you how many sit-ups you did in a day? This is like a demand of his?
It's just, the water aerobics. Did you go today? What time did you go? I drove through, he would say that he drove through the parking lot and he didn't see my car there, so I must be lying. I mean, these are the things he says to me.
Yeah, so This is unacceptable. That is not how anyone should treat a parent or another person. So I don't. Do you have any idea? He seems to have a lot of hostility towards you. Is this relationship only on text? What happens when you are, say, you ever see him in person? Nick? Hello? What happened to Nick? Nick, if you can hear me, please call me back, okay? Because you're suddenly gone. Hopefully you'll call back. Look, that is just unacceptable bullying from anybody. You know, it's one thing to say, hey, Dad, you know, are you taking care of yourself? Are you getting enough exercise? But this kind of like, I'm checking up on you. It's almost like a stern, mean dad, like a mean dad. The son's being a mean dad to his dad. So I don't know what that's about. Hopefully Nick will call us back. But Nick, if you're listening, the first thing to do when someone is bullying you is to set limits. I think I heard you say that you're no longer responding to those texts, which is good. The other thing is to, if you can have a civil conversation with him, you can talk to him. I would use what I call the SET formula, S-E-T. So that stands for situation, emotion, translation. So the situation, son, when you send me these hostile text messages, oh, here he is again. Hi, welcome back, Nick.
Yeah, I lost you. And so I'm living with this day to day, and it's quite annoying. That's all. What can I say? I'm just telling you, I'm fighting this war, not with my weight, but with my son. He's just beyond control and says things that are just so mean.
It sounds very mean, it sounds controlling, and it sounds bullying and painful. So here's what I suggest. If he's someone that you could have a conversation with, I suggest the what I call the SET method, S-E-T. So situation, emotion, translation. So the situation is, hey, son, when you send me these hostile messages... That's the situation. Emotion. I feel angry, hurt, confused, disgusted, whatever the emotions are. And then the most important part is the translation, because it means. So what does it mean to you that he is speaking to you in this way?
I have no idea. I don't know.
Means and, he doesn't respect you as a father. Means he doesn't trust you.
No, and as a kid, everything, we were so close. We did everything together. I mean, everything. And sporting events. And this, we were so very close. And now this is like, I don't know. I find myself not wanting to talk to him or lie to him just to get him off my back. This is not healthy.
No, it's not healthy. But?
I think you're right. I didn't put that. I put it down finally last night. He says, oh, explain what you mean about something, which I didn't say anything. I said, why don't we just sit down and talk? And I hope that he'll reply. And if I see him one-on-one, he'll melt anyways. He won't be the same kind of guy.
So he's different. He's different on text.
Oh, 100%.
So it's sort of like Jekyll and Hyde. The person in person, he's
yes.
Dr. Jekyll, and on text, he's Mr. Hyde.
Right. Absolutely.
Well, I think sitting down with him is really important, and being able to say, look, I am not going to tolerate being spoken to this in this way. I will not be responding to these texts. I will, if you continue, I will block your texts. And we can just see each other in person because you're very different that way. But what is this all about? And then, you know, when you do this, I feel this because it means this. What's this all about, son? Like, what's up? Why? So that's what you do with him. And then there's how you comfort yourself. This is a very painful, upsetting, enraging, bad situation to be bullied by anyone. Right? So what are you doing to comfort yourself or to be reassuring to yourself?
Well, I'm going to comfort myself. You may laugh at this. I've been eating a lot of ice cream.
No. No. Are you just saying that? Are you just saying that? That's funny.
Well, then, that's all I'm going to say.
Oh, okay. Well, then this is the perfect show for you, Nick. This is, it's like made for you because I'm about to talk about ice cream. That was like if this were a scripted show, I could not have scripted that better.
Thank you. And I'm glad I had a chance to talk about this because last couple of weeks you had some speakers that were really good. But I'm so glad that I had a chance to call you and get this off my mind. And now try something and see what we come up with.
All right. Well, we're gonna talk about ice cream and what else you can do other than use ice cream.
Yeah, and, I love ice cream.
And I'm so sorry. Also, it sounds like, you know, this is a very destructive way of communicating that your son has. I don't know why he's so hostile, but it's certainly very hurtful and very upsetting. And you got to take care of yourself instead of taking care of him. All right, stay tuned, Nick. I'm more on ice cream. This is your show. I dedicate this show to you, Nick.
Thank you.
Okay.
Goodbye.
Bye. Okay, so also, as I was just about to say, I was saying on Friends, Chandler used to eat ice cream whenever he'd have some romantic breakup or something devastating that happened to him. So it's not just chick flicks. It's guys, too, as evidenced by Chandler from Friends and Nick and lots of other guys. Lots of people can, definitely relate to that. There's also this movie called That Awkward Moment about these guys. It's like a, you know, this bro movie. And there's this one guy who's going through a divorce, and his friends come over, like, with whiskey. And he's like, no whiskey, ice cream. So, actually, ice cream has become so synonymous with comfort that an ice cream company launched a flavor called, wait for it, Bad Breakup. Yes, Bad Breakup. I don't know whether to do a yay or a buzzer. I'm going to do neither. So it's this concoction of caramel ice cream and fudge and hearts and bad breakup ice cream, and it's supposed to banish the breakup blues. So another ice cream manufacturer called Mochi declares on its website, when you're sad, a big bowl of ice cream will be there to cheer you up. The silk smooth bowl of ice cream is scientifically proven to help make breakups, heartaches, and other major causes of sadness easier to get through. That's right. They say scientifically proven. So what about that? Is it hype, or is ice cream really scientifically proven to help us recover from sadness? Okay, I wish I had a drum roll in my arsenal of sound effects. I do not, so just imagine it. Drum roll, yes. It is a scientific fact. Eating ice cream really does make you happy. Not that you needed science to prove that, but neuroscientists at the Institute of Psychiatry in London scanned the brains of people eating vanilla ice cream and found it did not take much to light up the parts of the brain related to pleasure. So, as one of the researchers put it, this is the first time we've been able to show that ice cream makes you happy. Okay. Just one spoonful lights up the happy zones of the brain in clinical trials. And there have been lots and lots of other researchers, including one. This is kind of gross but interesting. So gross but so interesting. Okay, in Belgian researchers in Belgium recruited 12 volunteers to voluntarily put a feeding tube in their stomach, and then the researchers fed them through the tube. Sometimes the volunteers were given a salty solution. So remember, this is just going into a feeding tube in their stomach, nothing to do with your mouth. So sometimes the volunteers were given a salty solution, sometimes a fatty solution. They didn't know which one they were getting. And then they listened to sad or neutral classical music while looking at images of human facial expressions, all of which matched the emotion of the music. Which, I don't know, that sounds a little subjective, but I'm not going to argue. And as this was all going on, their brains were being scanned. So interestingly, they were less sad and less hungry when they were given the fatty solution. In fact, the intensity of the sad emotion was reduced by almost half. So eating ice cream really can diminish sad feelings, if only for a limited time, but mostly because of how our brains react to the fat content in ice cream. Texture is also really important. Like, you know, there's a big difference between sherbet and ice cream, as we all know. And so our experience of taste is really a fusion of taste, smell, and feel. So it's like take color, right? It's not just one thing. Like, color can actually affect the way we perceive taste. So check this out. This has to do with wine, not ice cream, but it applies. So researchers took 50 undergraduate students who were studying the science of wine and winemaking. So these are like total wine geeks. And for the study, first the students tasted a glass of red wine. Then they tasted a glass of white wine. Next, they were asked to describe the wine in detail. Bear with me, this is going to relate to ice cream. So what they did not know, what these wine geek students did not know, is that the same wine was in both glasses. So the white wine had just been dyed with food coloring to make it look red. So the students talked about the red wine as if it were actually red wine, using all those typical phrases one uses for red wine when one is a big wine geek. I don't know those phrases because I'm not a wine geek. None of them could tell that they were drinking the same wine each time. So this suggests that color plays a significant role in the way we perceive taste. So think about it. You might not want that bowl of chocolate ice cream if it was purple, right? So the mindset of ice cream. So you probably don't actually need scientific proof that ice cream makes you happier. So remember, the next time you reach for ice cream or something smooth and creamy, which indicates comfort, remember what you're actually craving is to feel better. So if you want to stop eating ice cream, or if you want to eat it in moderation, you need to find a new way to comfort yourself. And that is exactly what I'm going to talk about. Let's call her Marta. That's what Marta needed to get over her ice cream cravings, which were pretty strong. So when she first came to see me, Marta was eating a pint of ice cream every single night. She had recently moved to LA from somewhere in the Midwest, and it was a real culture shock for her. And it seemed to her that everyone in Southern California was skinny and confident and drove like a high-end car. That's her perception of LA. And each day she drove her ancient, you know, I don't know, Volvo, whatever it was, past these luxury vehicles and the drivers and these cars were dressed fashionably and looked fabulous. And so Marta felt frumpy and unsuccessful every single day just by the time she got to work, just by driving. And of course, people seemed scary, and she was really too intimidated to even try to make new friends. She just felt less than. And so Marta talked about what she ate every day. So she ate oatmeal for breakfast, and then she put peanut butter in her oatmeal because that's how they eat it where she's from in the Midwest. And then lunch was usually some kind of soup or maybe pasta, and she really liked mac and cheese more than anything with a red sauce. And occasionally she had cravings for rice pudding. So I thought about this and I was like, you know, Marta, everything you're eating was soft and smooth. And my first thought was that all her food choices were the consistency of baby food. And she said, huh, you know, it almost seems like too much work to chew a sandwich or cut up a piece of steak. It's easier just to eat something soft. So soft, smooth, creamy foods are definitely easier to eat, and we associate them with the way we were comforted as babies, when food was synonymous with nurturing and comfort. And those foods made us feel loved and safe. And when we go through challenging times, we turn to those same foods for comfort. Case in point, after 9/11, restaurants in New York City served more comfort food than ever before. There's statistics that say, I don't know what it was, like the number of people who ordered mac and cheese at a restaurant, like quadrupled, something like that. I don't know, but that sounds like, if my memory is correct, something like that, something really high. So also, smooth, creamy foods are immediately available. You don't have to go to much trouble to open a carton of ice cream. You can put mac and cheese in the microwave. You can eat it within minutes. You don't really have to take effort to take care of yourself. And check this out. Ice cream, frozen yogurt, pudding, even mac and cheese, they're also all dairy foods. So when we need comfort, even if we're using almond milk, coconut milk, whatever, milk, right? What we turn to some form of mother's milk as a source of comfort. We may use coconut milk, we may use almond milk or other non-dairy substances, but the term milk applies, and milk resonates deep in our psyches, in our spirit. Milk is our first nourishment, our first safety, our first experience of the combination of love and food as comfort. Isn't it also interesting that we use terms like, oh, let's smooth things over to convey reassurance, making things better. When things go well, it's smooth sailing. And a particularly like sensuous singing voice is silky smooth. Chocolate mousse is often described as having silky smooth texture. So smooth and just good feelings go together. The texture of smoothness is associated with comfort and well-being. So Marta says to me, after we explore all this, she's like, okay, I get why I like comfort food, she tells me. But what do I do with that information, Dr. Nina? What do I do? How do I actually create change? Great question, because you don't want to just understand something intellectually. Understanding something intellectually doesn't get you very far. It's like, okay. And, you know, there is no Oprah aha moment followed by total change. It's not like you go, oh my God, I get it. Now everything's different. No, it's, oh my God, I get it. Now what? So, It's not enough to know why we are choosing to eat ice cream to make us stop eating ice cream. We got to shift our relationship to ourselves. We got to change the way we think. We got to notice what we wish, need, feel. What are our, you know, what do we need more of in our lives? We've got to get comfortable with giving ourselves support, with understanding ourselves, with loving ourselves. When you do that, that's true comfort. Then you don't need comfort food. So brings to mind an Oscar Wilde quote. Just getting a text that someone is trying to call me and there's no answer, but it didn't go through. Let me just take a moment and let my engineer know that there's an issue. So Oscar Wilde said, to love oneself is the beginning of a lifelong romance. A lifelong romance. He was absolutely right. Okay, this is so wrong. I can't multitask. I can't text the engineer and write. So I've got to just take a second. Hold that thought. I'm going to take a second and I'm going to let him know. I'm almost done. Okay. Ronan, the engineer. Hopefully he knows that. Okay, Oscar Wilde. To love oneself is the beginning of a lifelong romance. And he was absolutely right, you know? The way we talk about ourselves, the way we talk to ourselves, affects how we feel about ourselves. So smooth words lead to feeling good. When we're loving, kind, and supportive, we don't need food for comfort or escape. Now, unfortunately, the first thing that our first impulse is usually not to treat ourselves kindly. Our first impulse is often to criticize ourselves. So if that internal critic is always judging, interpreting, analyzing, and finding fault, it makes our lives miserable. So miserable that we may use food to escape our own mean voice. So let me tell you about Corinne. Every night after getting her three kids to bed, Corinne plopped down on the couch with a pint of ice cream and a soup spoon. She said she didn't have the energy to exercise. She kept telling herself, this is how she put it. She's like, I tell myself every night, like, oh, you're so lazy. You keep promising to be healthy. You never do it. You suck. But it doesn't do any good. I don't listen to myself. I said, how old are your kids? The twins are 4 years old. The baby just turned one. They're a real handful. Oh, my God. So I said, you have three children under the age of four. That is a lot of work. And she's like, tell me about it, yawning, right? So every night, Corinne woke up every few hours to change a diaper, soothe the colicky baby. I mean, she's up all night. And then her twins are in daycare. And then they come home and they're in a constant motion, like jumping and climbing and running and pushing each other and shoving each other and screaming. And in between refereeing the kids so they don't break the house, she's caring for the baby. I'm like, okay, how is that remotely lazy? And she's like, I should be able to do the mom thing and somehow have energy left over for exercise and stuff like that. She thought she should be superwoman, I guess. So I said, okay, you take care of your kids all day, and then you're totally wiped out. Maybe that's not the best time for you to think about going to the gym. So Corinne decided to try something new. So she took the baby for a long walk while the twins were in daycare. And she would listen to music or to audiobooks, and she'd just enjoy that time to herself. And she found that she was feeling better by the end of the day, more relaxed by the end of the day. And so she no longer depended on ice cream as her only source of comfort or escape. And after a few weeks, she was like, she couldn't believe it. She was like, it's like my ice cream cravings are gone. I still eat it, but not like I used to. And she said that she had gone down a whole size without dieting. without dying. By the way, the other day, one of my patients told me that she had had to go to the doctor for something, and they weighed her, and, you know, I had told her, don't look at the scale, like, weigh yourself backwards if you have to get on the scale. But the doctor said to her, oh, my God, what have you been doing? You've lost 60 pounds. And she's like, yeah, I kind of knew my clothes were getting loose, but I just thought they stretched out. You know what? When you change your relationship to yourself, you change your relationship to food, and then you go down a whole size. You lose 60 pounds without trying. And once you change your relationship to yourself, everything's changed. Right? It's not like you go on a diet and you go off and back to your old ways. When you're nice to yourself, you're not going to suddenly stop and go back to being mean to yourself. It just does not work that way. So basically, Corinne had discovered a new way of relaxing, and that simple shift changed her dysfunctional relationship to Ben & Jerry's. So she reframed her self-critical narrative, and she discovered a more balanced perspective. She realized, like, she wasn't lazy. She was just working hard and you know, tiring herself out and having totally unreasonable expectations of herself. Okay, so now remember how Corinne called herself lazy? You know, there is a phrase, you've probably heard of it, sticks and stones can break my bones, but words can never hurt me. So not true. Absolutely not true at all. Words hurt. Bones heal. Words have lasting impact. And when you change your language, when you change your words, when you change your vocabulary, the way you feel changes. So remember, again, Corinne called herself lazy. She felt bad about herself. She used ice cream to soothe herself. When she changed the way she related to herself, everything else fell into place. So that is why it is so important to notice the way you talk to yourself. So it's bad enough when someone else says hurtful things. Nick, if you're listening, you know, it's really bad when your son says hurtful things. But don't you say hurtful things to yourself either. So changing the way you talk to yourself is very powerful. And if you listen to the show, you've probably heard me talk about this quote, which I love, by Marcia Hutchinson, a psychologist who writes about transforming body image. She says, if you talk to your friends the way you talk to your body, you'd have no friends left. If you talk to your friends the way you talk to your body, you'd have no friends left. So true. Right? So the way you talk to your body, the way you talk to yourself has to change. Example, Tessa. One day she came in, she said that she had made the mistake of getting on the scale, and she was horrified. She said she knew she'd gained weight, but she was at her highest weight ever, and she was disgusted with herself. That's what she said. She said, I am disgusted with myself. And then she said, and you know what I did next? I went downstairs and polished off all the ice cream from the other night. Now I'll gain even more weight. I am so gross, so disgusting, it doesn't even make any sense. I hate myself. So I was like, please stop. If she kept going, she would spend the next hour of her session just saying mean things about herself. So I said, wait a second. Let's just talk about your friend, Mimi. And she's like, Mimi? What about Mimi? I was like, your friend Mimi also struggles with her weight. She's like, yeah, we met at Weight Watchers. So I asked Tessa to imagine that Mimi came over to her, upset about having gotten on the scale and seeing a weight that truly horrified her. How would Tessa respond to her? I asked her to imagine saying, Mimi, I am horrified by how much you weigh. I'm disgusted with you. You are gross and I hate you. Those are the things she said to herself. She looked aghast. This is really the only one. She's like, no. Oh, I could never say that. I'd never be so mean. That's horrible. That's a horrible thing to say. I said, okay, what would you say instead? to your friend Mimi. She's like, oh, you know, I know you're upset that you gained weight, but you know what? I love you anyway. You're doing the best you can. There's a reason maybe that you've been eating more. Maybe we can go on a walk together later. So I said, awesome. Now imagine if you talk to yourself that way. And she said that she didn't know if she could do that because that sounded selfish. And then she said, you know what? Doesn't make sense. Why is it selfish for me, for her, but not for anyone else? Exactly. So a lot of women are taught to take care of other people and put their needs first. They learn to be hard on themselves and treat others with kindness and compassion. And then it could seem wrong or selfish to be kind to yourself, to be loving. So we often treat other people with the compassion that we deny ourselves. So if your only way of self-soothing and getting comfort is with ice cream or something along those lines, it's going to be difficult to stop using ice cream for comfort. It's going to be hard. It's, if not impossible, it's about willpower. Basically, you're setting yourself up because you're like, okay, this is the only way I can comfort myself, but I can't comfort myself, so I just got to live stuck in these horrible feelings that I can't be with. Of course, that you're going to go for ice cream. How could you not? But here's the good news. And here's the good news. When you cultivate a new way of relating to yourself, you will feel a lot better. So Tessa regularly turned to ice cream or pudding or kind of creamy desserts to temporarily escape her own mean voice. What she needed was a way to be kinder to herself. What she needed was to be as kind to herself as she was to her friends. Like, she was super nice to her friends, super understanding and considerate and lovely. She just wasn't that to herself. So in time, she practiced this. She had a couple of rules. We made a couple of rules for her. One was, you know, if you wouldn't say it to someone you love, don't say it to yourself. And the other one was, don't talk to yourself in the second person. But I'll get to that later. Do we have time? Maybe I'll get to that next week. But number one rule for Tessa was, if she wouldn't say it to somebody else, she would not say it to herself. So once this was in her mind, she caught herself constantly being mean to herself, and she was blown away. She could not believe how mean she actually was to herself. She couldn't believe how often she found fault with herself or scolded herself or told herself she wasn't doing something right, or she was a loser, or she was bad, or she's a bad person, or, you know, just it went on and on and on. And so by paying close attention to the way she talked to herself, she was able to stop criticizing and attacking herself and start practicing a new, kinder way of responding. So Nick, or anyone out there, instead of going to ice cream for comfort, you know, you gotta recognize, hey, I need comfort right now. What would I say to someone else who needs comfort? Would I say, hey, you need comfort? Here's some ice cream. That'll make you feel better. I mean, you might, but maybe don't do that. Would you say, here's some ice cream, that'll do the trick? Or would you talk to them just like Tessa did to her friend Mimi? Now, not everyone is on board with this idea of self-compassion. One example is Dan. He is a successful contractor who was a regular customer at the local ice cream store. Oh, yeah. And he said, he's a dude, and that stuff isn't for guys. It reminds me of, I was on some interview once, some podcast interview, and I was talking about, you know, you have to identify what you feel, and you've got to work with your feelings. And the host of the podcast said, well, wait a minute, I'm a dude, I don't have feelings. Oh, yeah, dude, yeah, you do. So Dan was pretty much 100% certain that being nice to himself was not going to work. And I wanted to ask him, well, where is your crystal ball where you can see the future? Like, why are you so 100% certain? But I withheld that. I didn't say that. Instead, I said, well, what makes you so positive? It won't work. He said, if I'm nice to myself, I won't be motivated to get anything done. I'm like, okay, let me get this straight. You believe that by criticizing yourself, you're actually motivating yourself to achieve more. He's like, yeah, that's right. And I said, and if you're nice to yourself, you won't get anything done. He's like, yeah. If I didn't force myself, I probably wouldn't even get out of bed. Every morning I tell myself, this is important. This is important, by the way. Every morning I tell myself, get up, you lazy bum. Get a move on before the day is ruined. If I didn't say stuff like that, he says to me, I'd just stay in bed and never get anything done. So I said, I wonder who called you a lazy bum when you were a kid. Sounds sort of like an old-fashioned term. He's like, my dad called me that every morning. But that's got nothing to do with anything, he tells me. I said, okay, so you think if you didn't call yourself names every morning, you'd just stay in bed and do nothing? He's like, that's right. I'd just stay in there all day. So we did an experiment. And I said, like, the next day, you're gonna give yourself permission to be a lazy bum. Be a lazy bum. Stay in bed all day. You have permission to do it. And he looked at me like I'd gone completely crazy. I'm like, give it a try. Just one day, tell yourself you can stay in bed as long as you want. You can do whatever you want, just a day. He's like, that's crazy. I'm not going to get anything done. He's like, I've got employees, I've got clients, I've got people who depend on me. I said, it's just one day. Oh, this is not going to work, he says. How is being lazy for a day going to make me stop eating ice cream? I said, give it a try. Let's see what happens. So the next week, he comes in and he told me he did what I wanted him to do. And it didn't turn out how he thought it would. He had not stayed in bed all day, as he feared he would. He actually got bored after an hour. So he went to his job site. He dealt with subcontractors, other contractor issues. And he kept telling himself he could go back home and chill out. But instead, he got a lot done. And not surprisingly, he barely ate any ice cream all week, right? Because he wasn't slave driving himself. He wasn't being mean to himself, so he didn't have to comfort himself or get away from his own mean voice with ice cream. So Dan learned that giving himself permission to relax was actually motivational. He thought he would turn into a lazy bum because that's what his father had called him. Instead, he was kinder to himself, stopped using ice cream to escape his mean inner dad voice. So actually, self-compassion is, again, scientifically proven. Research shows that self-compassion is a lot more motivational than self-criticism. In a study at UC Berkeley, students were given instructions to imagine either their greatest weakness or failing. Then they were asked to imagine talking to themselves from a compassionate and understanding perspective. What would they say if they weren't going to berate themselves and tear themselves apart? If they were to be compassionate, they were to be understanding. And everyone in the study showed a significant improvement in their willingness to learn from their weakness and actually improve on it instead of feeling like failures, instead of criticizing themselves for weakness and failures. They actually were able to make changes and failures turned into successes. So they were more likely to take action to change and more optimistic about change when they came from a self-compassionate place. A leading researcher in the study of self-compassion, Kristen Neff, says, quote, when the motivational power of self-criticism comes from fear of self-punishment, the motivational power of self-compassion comes from the desire to be healthy and to reduce our suffering. The motivational power of self-compassion comes from the desire to be healthy, to reduce our suffering. And that's what it's all about, right? We don't want to be in a place of suffering, don't want to be in a place of pain. That just leads to ice cream. or other things, the nicer you are to yourself, the better you feel. The better you feel, the less likely you need ice cream. See how it works? It sounds so simple. It's not easy to make this change, but it is possible. So thank you so much for joining me today. For those of you who are trying to call in, Nick's the only one who got through. Apparently there were some phone issues that Ronan is still working on fixing. Hopefully they will be up repaired by next week. So feel free to call me next week at 10 a.m. Pacific time here on LA Talk Radio. If you like the kinds of things that I'm talking about, I've got some really cool giveaways on my website, winthedietwar.com. You can sign up for any of them. You know, how to get through the night without binging. Really cool downloads and guidelines to understand why you're doing what you're doing and give you some steps to change, because taking action is what it's all about, right? So thanks for joining me again, and I'll see you next week.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.